Good afternoon. This is a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas, 91.3 KUAF. And this is Ozarks at Large for Friday, January 11th, 2019. It is about 6 and a half minutes after 12. Just ahead on this Friday, Ozarks, Roby Brock with Talk Business and Politics will preview the Arkansas General Assembly's upcoming session, plus yesterday's visit to Arkansas by the St. Louis Fed chief, and this week's $100 million purchase by J.B. Hunt. Later on the show, a new art exhibit explores black experiences in white spaces and more. We'll hear from one of the artists involved in shared experiences in our second half hour. And after today's Ozarks at Large, it's Science Friday. This week, a look at how the government shutdown is affecting science and what might happen if the shutdown continues, plus how a smartphone app might help save opioid users from overdoses, and scientists report new data on mysterious distant radio bursts. Science Friday, today from 1 to 3 on 91.3 KUAF. The Arkansas Razorback indoor track and field season begins this afternoon in Fayetteville with the Arkansas Invitational at the Tyson Indoor Track Facility. The women's indoor team opens the season as the pick to win the national championship, coming in as the preseason number one selection in the U.S. Track and Field and Cross Country Coaches Association poll released yesterday. Arkansas women were national runners-up last year. The Arkansas men enter this season ranked 8th in the country. The Arkansas Invitational begins with the men's shot put in under half an hour. Running events begin this afternoon just after 3 o'clock. The Arkansas General Assembly will convene next week at Highways. A vision of streamlined state government and more will be discussed over the next few months. To discuss the upcoming session and more with us, we welcome Roby Brock from Talk Business and Politics back to Ozarks at Large. Roby, thanks for being with us.
Great to be with you and all your listeners, Kyle.
Tis the season. The legislators will get down to business by this time next week. Governor Asa Hutchinson would like to have plenty of bills about streamlined government going through the process pretty quickly, wouldn't he?
He would, but I think you're giving the legislature a little too much credit that they're going to get down to business next week.
Okay.
I mean, they do tend to do a little pomp and circumstance these first few days. And, you know, it's kind of like coming back to school after the summer break. Everybody gets to see each other for the first time since either the campaign trail or sometimes from the last legislative session. But yeah, the governor's transformation plan, where he wants to reorganize state government from 42 agencies, boards, and commissions that report to him to about 15 departments, the governor says that is going to be something he moves early on and quickly with, because A, I think he wants to scratch it off of his to-do list, but B, some of the other bills that will get filed, and there'll be as many as 3,000 bills, they're all going to be affected to some extent by what agencies have to, you know, cover those or implement those from an executive branch perspective. And so there may be some legal language that has to be written for some of these bills to make that happen. So getting that through, which I think there's generally pretty overwhelming consensus for the governor on that, that will be his first priority.
The governor's going in with a re-election of 65% of the folks who voted, so I imagine he might get a lot of what he would like to get.
Well, and he typically has gotten a lot
that's true.
Wanted to get, too. And
as have other governors, right? Yeah.
Other governors have, but I think what's really working in Governor Hutchinson's favor and has for the last session or two is the supermajorities in the Arkansas legislature that are Republican. Got 76 Republicans in the House and 26 of 35 in the Senate. That makes it pretty easy to get your agenda through when you're typically all on the same page because of your party affiliation. So I think Asa's vision of conservative, pragmatic governing is going to be adopted pretty widely by the legislature. So we will see that transformation plan move quickly. He wants to raise teacher pay, which I don't think there'll be much resistance to. He wants to do his tax cut, and there are going to be some differing thoughts on that, but I think that in a few weeks and some consensus building, they'll all get on the same page. They've boiled it down to several plans, and they've done a lot of work through that task force on taxes, so there won't be a whole lot of education to do on that. I expect that he will get largely what he wants on tax reform. The biggie, though, that's out there that nobody really knows what's going to happen is on the highway plan. The fourth T, as we call it, transportation. We're just not sure. There's just not consensus yet for what might happen, and I think it will take a couple of weeks in the state capitol of lawmakers and the governor doing a little horse trading and having some conversations about what they think is the art of the possible for a highway plan, and that's where you'll see something come together. I think you'll see a lot of ideas floated early about what may or may not happen, just to do some trial balloons and test some stuff.
All right. Well, St. Louis Federal Reserve Bank President James Bullard in the state yesterday. He talked trade wars a little bit, the shutdown, interest rates, the global economy. Other than that, just small talk for a Thursday afternoon. What was your takeaway from his visit?
Well, my takeaway from this visit is that if I ever feel like I'm having trouble falling asleep at night, I am going to pull up those slide presentations from the St. Louis Fed and other Federal Reserve banks and just read some of them, because it is some high-end economic theory that gets discussed in some of these talks. But on a practical level, the St. Louis Fed Chief, James Bullard, did have some interesting comments in his Little Rock appearance there. He talked a lot about the fact that he does not foresee interest rates being raised much, if any, this next year. And he is of the opinion that they should not be. And his opinion counts a lot, because this year, he is on the Federal Open Market Committee, which is the body that makes the decision on whether or not to raise interest rates. So the fact that he's saying he's a no vote on that at this point in time until he sees some data to convince him otherwise was a pretty strong statement. He also said he sees the potential for some economic slowdown in America, some, but more worldwide. And because it would happen in some other countries around the world, it would be a drag on the U.S. economy. So those were two things that he talked about pretty extensively.
All right. Finally, J.B. Hunt went out and was looking for a post-holiday purchase, and they found one in Corey First Choice Home Delivery. It's out of New Jersey. What do we know about Corey First Choice Home Delivery?
Well, they've been around since 1934, and the fact that J.B. Hunt paid $100 million for them tells you they're pretty big and pretty profitable. This is part of what you're seeing a lot of transportation companies A, struggle with, and B, try to figure out the right fit for. How do you get that final mile delivery to a customer's home? We're all aware of, you know, Amazon and Walmart's experimentations with, you know, two-day delivery, next-day delivery, you know, one-week delivery, in-store delivery, getting products to a person's doorstep or making it convenient for a consumer to get a product is a really, really big piece of the transportation puzzle. It's become an expectation among consumers now. And so J.B. Hunt, which typically you think of as doing very large loads of transportation, you know, we move, you know, rail cars and we move semis full of all kinds of things for different clients. You know, that final mile delivery for some products is something that J.B. Hunt's not really known for. And this Corey company that they bought is actually does a lot of bigger equipment kind of delivery. Think washing machines and dryers and furniture. And when somebody comes and brings something to your house to put something in, whether you bought it from Sears or wherever, Corey is a national company that does a lot of that. And now they're affiliated with J.B. Hunt.
There was an interesting statistic in the story about this at talkbusiness.net that now with this acquisition, J.B. Hunt's final mile division has more than 100 locations and I think more than 3 million square feet of warehouse around the country.
Yeah, and look, I don't think that they're done. I mean, J.B. Hunt is a company that is extremely protective and not very conversational about what they plan to do. I think some transportation analysts were a little bit surprised by this move, just because J.B. Hunt doesn't typically do a whole lot of acquisitions. But I think that, you know, they've got some very strong free cash flow right now. They're in a great financial position. And because of the way consumer expectations and trends are moving, I would not be surprised to see another acquisition. It could be smaller. I don't think there's a whole lot that could be bigger. But I wouldn't be surprised to see J.B. Hunt do something else in that space.
Yeah, I was going to ask you because, you know, we went through that spate with Walmart. They were buying things like Moose Jaw and then Tyson. There always seems to be, over the course of a calendar year, some acquisition news with them. We don't really hear that much with J.B. Hunt, do we?
You don't. But look, at the end of the day, a publicly traded company is about producing value for their shareholders. And if they've got money in the bank and it's not doing anything but just earning small interest, that's not a good deployment of capital for shareholders, and it's not producing additional returns for them. And when's the best time to kind of do something? Is it when your business is doing really well or when your business is, you know, about to go under? It's best to be in the position of, we can do the acquisition and we can build our business even stronger because we're already in a strong position. That's where J.B. Hunt is sitting right now. So, again, pure speculation on my part, but I would not be surprised to see them do something else of this magnitude or along these lines sometime in the next year, 2 years.
All right. Well, we won't have to wait that long until we talk to you again. By this time next week, whether they've gotten down to business or not, the legislators will be in Little Rock. We'll talk to you then. Roby Brock is with Talk Business and Politics. You can read about these stories and many others and follow what happens with the legislature and the governor at talkbusiness.net. Roby, have a great weekend. Thanks for your time.
You bet, Kyle.
Portions of the federal government continue to operate without funds and with limited unpaid staff. We'll get the latest. Also, Enes Kanter of the New York Knicks didn't go to London for a game against the Wizards because of fears for his safety. We'll talk to this Turkish player about his concerns. And the latest from along the U.S.-Mexico border, Saturday on Weekend Edition from NPR News.
Weekend Edition Saturday with Scott Simon tomorrow morning from 7 to 9 on 91.3 KUAF. This is Ozarks at Large. The University of Arkansas and Northwest Arkansas Community College have created a program that will allow students to attend both institutions simultaneously. Officials from both schools signed a memorandum of understanding yesterday afternoon on the U of A campus. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda attended the ceremony, and she has this report.
The new initiative is called the Transition Academic Program, or TAP for short. Jim Coleman, Provost and Executive Vice Chancellor for Academic Affairs at the U of A, says a lot of people worked for a long time to create TAP. Coleman says the program will help students by creating a pathway to both an associate degree and a bachelor's degree while giving students the tools and support they need to be successful academically at both institutions.
Students who aspire for a four-year degree but aren't quite ready academically will be served by the Transition Academic Program, or TAP. And in this program, they will gain the necessary academic experience and credentials, as well as mentoring and assimilations designed to foster their success. Successful completion of the program will provide a seamless and simultaneous experience on both the Northwest Arkansas Community College and the University of Arkansas campus.
The new program will allow students who don't meet the full requirements for admission at the U of A to enroll as non-degree-seeking students and take one course a semester at the U of A, while enrolling and taking at least three courses at the NWAC campus in Bentonville or Springdale. After at least two semesters, students who maintain a 2.0 grade point average or better can transfer full-time to the U of A while still taking courses toward an associate degree at NWAC. The program also allows U of A credits to count toward an NWAC degree. U of A Chancellor Joseph Steinmetz says more collaboration like this is needed.
And the purpose of the TAP program is to increase the academic opportunities to eligible students and increase the number of degrees that are actually produced in the state here. And I think that this also supports the state's new orientation towards the performance funding model that we are now under. Will assist in the degree attainment for more Arkansans, and that's extremely important. I think you all know the state of Arkansas is at near the bottom of the list in the proportion of our population that have credentials and degrees, and we can do something about it.
According to the U.S. Census, only about one in five Arkansans 25 years old or older have a bachelor's degree or higher. One barrier to achieving higher education is cost, so financial aid will be available for qualified students who are part of TAP.
I have a lot of students that simply can't afford a higher education. I think this is one thing that helps in that regard. And we have a lot of students in the region that are place-bound here as well for lots of reasons. This program helps in that area. And these are things that the Northwest Arkansas Community Colleges have done well for years and years. And so we're happy to be part of a partnership to do that.
Evelyn Jorgensen, president of NWAC, says at the community college, they often see a lot of first-generation college students, as well as students who are unsure if college is for them. TAP might be beneficial for these students as well.
And what we like to believe at the community college, and we see proof of it often, is that if we do our jobs well at the community college, we light that fire and we help people recognize just how much potential they really have. And sometimes they come to us and they're not sure of how much potential they have. So if we do our jobs well at the community college, we create college students who then choose to go on to the university because they recognize they have potential. And sometimes they don't know that quite yet when they come to us. So we're very pleased to be part of this. I have no doubt that it's going to serve Arkansans well, and it will serve both institutions very well.
To qualify, students must meet NWAC admission standards and have an academic record that suggests they can succeed at the U of A with the support of the new program. Officials expect to admit 50 to 100 students into the transition academic program each academic year, beginning with the fall 2019 semester. The program may be expanded in the future. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And still ahead on our Friday edition of Ozarks at Large, as the partial federal government shutdown lurches toward becoming the longest in American history, how are some local agencies with ties to federal offices and federal money reacting?
Beginning in March, they will no longer guarantee those payments. We are in a situation where we have reserves for our voucher program that we could cover those payments.
An update on how the shutdown, as well as other matters, is affecting the Fayetteville Housing Authority. That's just ahead on today's Ozarks at Large.
The Northwest Arkansas chapter of Arkansas Master Naturalists continues to accept applications for their upcoming training. Classes start January 19th in Benton County, January 21st in Eureka Springs. Washington County classes are full. More information available online at wordpress.arkansasmasternaturalists.org. Support for 91.3 comes from Malco Theaters, featuring the Metropolitan Opera's live HD production of Adriana Lecouvre, Saturday, January 12th at 11:55 a.m. at the Razorback Cinema in Fayetteville. Malco.com for tickets. The Alma Performing Arts Center presents Still Magnolias by Robert Harling, February 21st at 7:30 p.m. Originally opening off-Broadway in 1987, Still Magnolias was adapted to the big screen in 1988, where six women's lives increasingly hinged on the existence of one another. Tickets and information at almapac.org or 632-2129.
The National Weather Service is pretty confident rain is part of the next several hours in the region. Chances of rain tonight and tomorrow morning for the Arkansas River Valley and Northwest Arkansas, 100%. Lows tonight from 34 to 38. Highs tomorrow afternoon from 39 to 45. Sunday's forecast, cloudy with highs from the upper 30s to mid-40s across the region. The swearing-in ceremonies for elected officials in Arkansas continue.
Well, guess what? I'm back!
Arkansas Supreme Court Justice Courtney Goodson was sworn in yesterday in Little Rock for another term on the state's highest bench, after winning that term from voters in last November.
It is such an honor to be sworn into the Supreme Court of Arkansas for the second time. And I am as excited and filled with hope as I was a decade ago when I first took the bench at the Court of Appeals. And I want to thank you for being here to share this very special day with me, because your presence is truly a gift to me.
The court will be in session to hear cases mid next week. This is Ozarks at Large.
So what's the secret to happiness?
If you want to have a happier life, I would say, look at what's unforgiven. Look at where you know you did wrong and you would like to go to that person and say, I'm sorry, can we start over?
I'm Guy Raz. Ideas about forgiveness, why it's important and why it's so hard, next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
The TED Radio Hour, Sunday afternoon at 1 on 91.3. As the government inches closer to the longest shutdown in history, housing agencies like the Fayetteville Housing Authority are tentatively considering their options. FHA Interim Director Angela Belford says the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development has assured housing agencies it can cover the cost of housing choice vouchers through February.
Beginning in March, they will no longer guarantee those payments. We are in a situation where we have reserves for our voucher program that we could cover those payments for the month of March, and then that would be the extent. We're going to get real nervous after that.
Belford says HUD also has enough funding to cover next month's operating subsidies.
In terms of public housing, we're in a situation where we do own all of our property, and it has been run very efficiently, and it has been, they have accumulated a reserve here. And so from a public housing perspective, we will maintain our current staffing and maintain our current level of service.
And Belford says the FHA has a minimum of 8 to 9 months of reserve funds they could use to cover the $200,000 a month HUD subsidy should they have to. But the agency would have to wait until the government reopens to access any capital funds, which is where the money for renovations at one of the public housing properties is coming from. As the Housing Authority prepares for that project, it's also preparing for a potential property purchase. And as Ozarks at Large's Zuzana Sitek tells us, that's something the Housing Authority hasn't done in more than 30 years.
Diners enjoy an evening meal at Cafe Rue Orleans as they overlook the Veterans Healthcare System of the Ozarks campus just across College Avenue. If everything goes according to plan, the restaurant may have a new landlord in the coming months. Cafe Rue Orleans rents its building from the owners of the Highway Inn Motel, who are now negotiating a sale of the property to FHA Development, a nonprofit formed by the Fayetteville Housing Authority in 2017.
Which means that we can apply for grants, we can enter into traditional partnerships that are in line with nonprofit organizations that may or may not be restricted for a government, quasi-governmental entity. And so basically, like, the nonprofit component, it just allows us to have a little bit more dexterity in the affordable housing space.
That's Melissa Terry, the chair of the Fayetteville Housing Authority Commission, as well as chair of the FHA Development Board. Terry says the idea to buy new property, something the Housing Authority hasn't done since it acquired Morgan Manor in 1983, came up after the agency got an emergency grant from the Department of Housing and Urban Development. That $3 million will go toward replacing all the sewer lines at Hillcrest Towers. But Terry says the Housing Authority also got a little over $240,000 to pay for transitional housing for its 120 tenants who will be displaced during the repairs.
With access to those funds, if we already have about $240,000 for transitional housing, that why would we not use that as a resource to invest in our own property?
Otherwise, Terry says that money might go to an apartment complex or an extended stay hotel.
And thinking about what's another way that we could go about doing that, that it seemed like that maybe the best solution or the preferable solution was to, like, in what case, in what scenario could we hold the whole cluster of 20 at a time residents in one space so that we could facilitate, you know, their needs. They could be with their peers who they normally are and just, you know, make it as comfortable as possible.
Just before the start of the new year, the Housing Authority Board authorized its interim director, Angela Belford, to look at potential properties that would fit the agency's needs. Belford says she came across the Highway Inn Motel through her work as the chair of the Northwest Arkansas Continuum of Care, a consortium of organizations that are working together to end homelessness in the region.
The Fayetteville Housing Authority has come through a time when it has been pretty tumultuous around here, so it is super exciting to be here at this pivotal time to be able to lead the conversation in innovative strategies. You know, several people have said, where are you going to get the money to do this project? And I was like, profit. We collect rental income and we operate at a profit.
Belford says FHA Development has agreed to buy the property for $731,000, and they estimate it may take another $650,000 to renovate the 24 rooms into studio apartments.
So to be considered a studio apartment, it will need a kitchenette. So that's a refrigerator, a cook stove, cooktop with a stove, a prep area, and a sink. So we'll put kitchenettes in each one, as well as the overall property, looking at the electrical service, the plumbing service, and the parking lot upgrades.
The property would initially be used to house tenants from Hillcrest Towers. Six waves of 20 people each would live at the motel for a year. And Belford says the idea is to use that $240,000 from HUD for their rent, which would be paid to the housing authority.
It's the income that is going to be the profit and the revenue for this project.
Melissa Terry says the profit made on rent would be another source of funding for the housing authority besides HUD. And once the sewer lines are repaired, Terry says the motel would be turned into veteran housing.
We feel like that once our renovations at Hillcrest Tower are complete, which will be done, we are mandated to be done by August 1st, 2020, that from that point forward, that as a result of this investment, we will still have a property long-term that can serve the needs of our veteran community and allow us the flexibility of having some mixed income units.
Belford says at this point they haven't decided how many of the apartments would be rented out at market rate. But she adds the property would still make money, even if all the units went to tenants with vouchers.
And so we based it on what those current payment standards are. So if we were to lease out all 24 at the lowest voucher rent, then that property will still cash flow with a reasonable management fee, with a reasonable vacancy rate, with a reasonable capital setback. I mean, we're running this as a for-profit.
Right now, Belford says FHA Development has 60 days to perform a survey and a due diligence assessment on the motel property to make sure their renovation estimate is accurate.
Due diligence will also be electrical, civil, you know, all of the mechanical engineering, making sure that the budget that we have for renovations is bore out with actual data.
Belford estimates all that work will add up to about $25,000. If they move forward with the project, that cost will be wrapped up into the mortgage. But if the assessment finds the renovations will exceed the housing authority's budget, the agency will have to cover the cost. Should the purchase go through, it would be financed through a traditional mortgage. But Melissa Terry says they're also exploring property-assessed clean energy financing, which is a way to finance energy efficiency improvements for residential and commercial properties.
The cheapest and cleanest kilowatt is the one we don't burn. So one of the things that we want to do in the renovation of this property is to basically create an energy performance contract scenario to where not only do we bring the facility up to the standards that we would expect any of our residents to want to live in, but to also substantially lower the energy footprint of the property, which then in turn is a dollar amount and lowers the operation costs over the long term.
Terry says the purchase of the new property would also address a problem the housing authority has had since its inception.
We also, as an organization, see that historically our capital investments have been in one geographical area in our community, and we have discussed on the record several times that we would like to see our geographical diversity spread out among at least all four wards eventually in the city, so that residents have choices based on where their kids are in school or where their employment is or whatnot.
And Terry adds, renovating properties like the Highway Inn Motel to serve the needs of the community is another way to revitalize parts of the city that need it.
You drive by there, you're like, there's a fantastic restaurant and a killer place to live right there. So right now there's a fantastic restaurant there, but you can't live there long term, and it's probably not suitable for that. So, but what we'd like to do is just to flip the script on that story.
That restaurant, Cafe Rue Orleans, is expected to stay.
It's like right here.
Terry and Belford say they've discussed the sale with the owners, who are interested in continuing to lease the building if FHA Development buys the property. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Susanna Sitek.
Angela Belford says provided the government opens back up, the Housing Authority plans to start moving people out of Hillcrest Towers between May and June. But she adds they won't have a timeline for renovations at the Highway Inn Motel until the agency purchases the property. Thank you. Tomorrow night, an exhibit of art addressing the lived experiences of African Americans in Northwest Arkansas will open. Shared Experiences is sponsored by Artist Laboratory Theater and curated by the Northwest Arkansas Black Artist Collective. Artists included in the show include Veronica Huff, Madison Moon, Raven Cook, and Corey Perry. Perry, a Fayetteville native, came to the Anthony and Susan Hoy News studio yesterday to talk about the art included and to talk about tomorrow evening's opening reception beginning at 6 at 1030 South College Avenue in Fayetteville. Corey says at that reception, you can see the art, and you'll also be able to hear from another artist, Kentrell Curry, who will deliver a talk about Fayetteville history.
Specifically, the black history of Fayetteville and how the artists are working and how that history informs how the artists work and what they think about.
Did you and your colleagues, your peer artists, did you come up with the name for the exhibit?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the heads of the collective right now are Raven Cook, Kentrell Curry, and myself. And we kind of came up with this idea. It was actually put forth by the Artist Lab Theater. It was in conjunction with their Imagine South Fayetteville event that they did last year. And they came to us with sort of like a raw idea, because like they were doing it on the history of South Fayetteville. And we kind of made it more broad of like the history of Fayetteville and the area in general. And we sort of just rolled with it from there.
You mentioned it, the presentation and the work itself kind of, is inspired by the black experience in Fayetteville and Northwest Arkansas, an experience that the majority of us probably don't know and certainly haven't experienced because the majority of us are not black. So how do you present that story through art?
The way that we're presenting it is that Kentrell's giving like some back history. So he's talking about the slave owners like Archibald Yeld and some of the slaves they had. There's a lot of names. We got a list of names of slaves, and there was also some history on who owned what land and also some history on some lynchings in the area. And we sort of go off of that history, plus the general history of the 1950s, 60s, you know, segregation, antebellum, all that. And we sort of like piece it together on how their experiences may have been, also have been, due to what information we have. And we're sort of like piecing it together. And so one artist is, their work is about mental health and how it's being disrupted via racism on a daily basis and oppression. And another artist grew up here. Her parents were here, and her great-grandparents were here, and her grandparents. And her work is mainly about being black in a white space, and that means basically being the only black person and how that works on a person's mind. And so a lot of these experiences that the artists have and are experiencing today, their perception of reality is very much parallel to the ancestors of this area and at large in this country.
You went to school in Fayetteville, and and in Fayetteville we're quick to explain that our schools peacefully integrated. We know that history if you live in Fayetteville. We don't often talk about segregation and Jim Crow and slavery. Those are harder things to talk about, but just as important to know.
Because it makes a lot of people uncomfortable.
Right.
Because we're not really, like, talking about it to our kids. And, I mean, a lot of black people are talking about it to their kids. But from the experiences that I've heard, a lot of people growing up grew up a particular way and never really got the context of why they had to think in that way. And so, yeah, a lot of history hasn't been passed down into their own offsprings because of X, Y, and Z. I really wouldn't know that reason, but, you know.
As you mentioned, it's often an uncomfortable or awkward or challenging conversation to have. Can art be a way to get into having some of these conversations?
I definitely believe so. Oh yes. Like, it's really interesting because art is like, it's non-invasive, but it's also invasive at the same time, depending on how it's navigated. And I do feel like when an artist is making work about their experiences and their perceptions of reality, it gives another insight. It's almost like a live history book. Like, you're learning about what the artist is doing and where they're from and how their environment is influencing them.
And it would seem like art can, you mentioned someone growing up always in tune to the fact, growing up black in a white space, mm-hmm. the one, you know. Mm-hmm. You can create art for people who also felt that and go, oh, yes, I get what you're saying. Mm-hmm. But that same piece of art can also talk to someone like me who doesn't know and help me understand what that person was going through.
Yes.
So it talks to the people that experienced the same thing mm-hmm. and those who didn't at yes. the same time.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I think that's another beautiful thing about it. And it also helps if the viewer is willing to understand. Because if the viewer isn't willing to understand, then they're always going to be at battle with themselves and at battle with the environment that's around them.
And then when you have something like a reception where the mm-hmm. art and the artist is together,
yes.
what better chance to help you understand?
Yes, because you have, because it's like you hear about the experiences and like through some media, like a TV or radio or book, and like there's somewhat of a disconnect because there's no human connection. Like there's you can still have a connection, but that human connection is key. And I can't wait to see how it's going to happen because, like, I think it would be so beautiful for people to come and, like, hear these experiences in our hometown and to learn that, oh, it's happening in Ferguson, it's happening in Atlanta and all these other places, but it's also happening right here in this city.
Yeah, and finally, if it's awkward or challenging to talk about mm-hmm. Race 30 or 40 or 50 years ago, it can be incredibly awkward or uncomfortable or challenging to talk about it in 2019.
Oh, I believe it.
But it has to be talked about.
It has to be talked about. Like, it's one of those things where it needs to be faced or it's just going to keep festering and people are just going to, like, it's like when you're speaking with somebody, but they just don't want to listen to you. And so the person is just going to speak louder and louder, and it's just going to get louder and louder, you know, until, you know, something happens or I don't know, stuff.
Right. Yeah, stuff, right.
And can I say one more thing about it?
Please.
I was okay. So it's like, even if you're uncomfortable about having these conversations, like, that's okay. It's a very valid thing to feel. Just know that nobody is accusing you or accusing the viewer of anything. Like, you may feel a specific type of way about somebody, but that's okay. And everybody who's going to be there is going to be very compassionate. They're not going to be accusatory or anything. They're there to help you learn and come to an understanding.
Okay, at the risk of getting just slightly uncomfortable right now, you and me.
Mm-hmm.
All right, I'm a white guy. I think sometimes there's the fear that if you begin to get into a serious conversation, mm-hmm. I may say something that is ignorant, the classic definition of ignorance, mm-hmm. or offensive.
Okay.
And I think to myself, well, maybe it's best not to ask a question or to get in this conversation than risk offending or sounding ignorant.
And that's a very valid thing. And I do agree you have to be careful when you ask questions like that because it's a mixed bag. And I can't speak for everybody, but I will say some people will get offended, highly offended, And some people won't get offended. They'll be very compassionate and understanding and try to rewire things and try to bring more enlightenment. And with this reception, there's going to be more of an enlightenment. Nobody's going to attack you. I guess nobody is going to look down on you for asking ignorant questions or what you perceive to be an ignorant question. Everybody's there to learn, to share, and to, you know, build.
To share an experience?
Mm-hmm. Share an experience, yeah.
Thanks so much.
Thanks.
Corey Perry is one of the artists whose work is included in the new exhibit titled Shared Experiences that will open tomorrow night at 6 at 1030 South College in Fayetteville. Other artists included in the show are Veronica Huff, Madison Moon, and Raven Cook. Also at tomorrow night's reception, Kendrell Curry will deliver a talk about Fayetteville history. The reception is free. However, registration is encouraged, and you can learn more about that at the Facebook page for Shared Experiences, a Black Art Exhibit. The exhibit is hosted by the Artist Laboratory Theater based in Fayetteville and curated by the Northwest Arkansas Black Artist Collective.
Washington Regional's Her Health Clinic provides comprehensive care for women of all ages, including gynecological exams, prenatal care and deliveries, infertility treatments, and women's primary care services. With two locations, Washington Regional's Women and Infant Center in Fayetteville and the Springdale Center for Health in Harbor Meadows. WRegional.com for more. Tony nominee and Emmy Award winner Liz Callaway stars in Every Brilliant Thing at Theater Squared. This insightful and hilarious new one-person play is sure to warm hearts with a list of everything brilliant in the world. This immersive, one-of-a-kind performance is a limited engagement of January 16th through February 10th. 443-5600 or theater2.org for tickets. SONA, the Symphony of Northwest Arkansas, continues its 64th season, January 26th, at Walton Arts Center. Maestro Paul Haas and SONA musicians present the season's second Masterworks concert, showcasing Verdi's Overture to La Forza del Destino and Chopin's Piano Concerto No. 2, featuring guest pianist Andrew Tyson. Tickets available at 443-5600 or sonamusic.org.
This is Ozarks at Large. Hey, guess what? For the first time in 2019, Becca Martin Brown, features editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette, is with me.
I'm back.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Holidays go well?
Yes.
Good.
Wonderful holidays with all the family and a chance to take it just a little bit easier.
I'm happy to hear that.
So, adjusting to being half in Bella Vista for work and half in Fayetteville.
That's right, because the morning news has consolidated into the property in downtown Fayetteville.
And remembering all the things I love about downtown Fayetteville that I've been gone from for 5 years. So it's all good.
And are you here to tell us that nothing is happening this weekend?
You know, I'm here to play a game with you.
I love games. You know that.
I know. I think about you when I'm picking out the things that we're going to talk about.
One of my secret ambitions is to someday host a game show.
You'd be so good. Hmm? Josh Gates.
Who's Josh Gates?
He's the host of Expedition Unknown and Destination Truth.
I don't know what these are, but I'm going to watch them now.
Yes, because you, okay. Yes, you would love it.
All right.
Okay, so this is like the introduction to Mysteries at the Museum, right?
Mm-hmm. Which is also a television show.
Yes, good job. They're small, simple to store, easy to display. They can date back to the Greeks, Etruscans, and Romans, but they saw their heyday in the Victorian era. Some of them are really pricey, like up to $30,000 pricey.
Mm-hmm.
But many of them are affordable to collect. Each one is one of a kind, and it's a portable work of art that can be held in the hand. What is this thing?
How many guesses do I get?
Three.
Snuff boxes.
Wrong.
Cameos.
Also wrong, but good. Date back to the Greeks, Etruscans, and Romans, but their heyday was in the Victorian era.
And they could be held in a hand?
Mm-hmm. And used while held in that hand.
They are playing cards. I don't know.
Folding hand fans.
Of course. Of course. Well done.
And we're talking about this because tomorrow is Collector's Day at the Shiloh Museum, the Cabin Fever Reliever, when friends of the museum bring their collections and show them off.
Last year, somebody brought their Do Not Disturb sign collection.
Well, Debbie Weddle, who works for the archaeology department on campus, collects folding fans. She has one that dates to 1710.
Is she going to bring that?
If she brings it, she will not let you touch it. Yeah. She has some that you can touch. She was on a vacation in New England about 15 years ago, and she walked into an antique store, as so many of us are wont to do, and saw a Civil War era folding fan and went, I could own that.
And off to the races she was?
And off to the races she was. She wanted to collect European fans, like Marie Antoinette fans, and then discovered that those can go for like the $30,000.
Wow.
But the one that she has, it's called a Tour of Italy fan. And it has each of the little, they call them leaves, has a hand-painted little scene from Italy. Wow. From when people in like the 30s went to Italy on like your graduation tour.
Right, right.
You know, she has some amazing things. I wish we could have run every single picture that she sent me. So she will have some you can touch, some you can look at. And there's even, I love this, there is a folding, well, there's more than one, but the Fan Association of North America.
Well, of course. I mean, if one person's collecting.
So if you fall in love with this, there are resources.
You know what I think is the interesting question to ask collectors? It isn't about the first one. It's about the third one. Because that's when you start to get committed, right?
We joke, my sisters and I that love to estate sale and flea market, joke that the third one is the breakover point. You can have two stuffed giraffes.
The third one.
The third one becomes a collection. I started out with two polar bears. I started out with two elephants.
The third one is also the signal to friends and family that they no longer have to think too hard about what to get you for your birthday or Christmas.
And thus it runs amok.
There you go. Okay, I interrupted.
So, Cabin Fever Reliever, 10 to 2 tomorrow at the Shiloh Museum in Springdale. It's free. Also slated to be shown are small and miniature pictures, not pictures, pictures. Wood carvings, bowling collectibles, Christmas albums, and I don't know if they mean music
or picture
albums.
I bet they mean music.
Crocheted ornaments, fairy lamps, turtles, both collectible and live.
Okay.
Cat collectibles, single-use kitchen utensils. This sounds like a collection of sporks. I don't know.
Yeah, I wonder what that is.
Coins. Rocks and oddities.
I'm sorry. Rocks and oddities. Okay.
And Balik pottery. And buttons.
There you go.
My sister and I did the Collector's Day one year because we collect a certain kind of mid-century modern china. It was so much fun. I mean, it's fun to go, but it's even more fun to be there with your stuff and have those conversations about how did you start this? And then we have some less happy news. We alluded to this before Christmas. Word's been on the street for a while, but it's actually official now that Heartwood Gallery and the block that it's in Fayetteville are for sale. They've been 17 years in that business.
Right.
Started out, Edward Heitmanek had his woodworking shop there, and then he built a bigger shop, and it became Heartwood Gallery. And their daughter's there with a business now, and it's just time.
Yeah. 17 years.
Well, and the Heitmaneks are older than you would possibly guess by knowing them or looking at them. And they're a little tired.
All right. So is it, are they close? Are the doors
no.
shut?
No. Everything is open until they just put it on the market. It's 1.4 acres and they want to sell it as a piece in hopes that somebody will do something to support the South Fayetteville.
Well, you've got the art corridor right around there, and so
So they're hoping that it will continue to be sort of a live, work, artist space or something like that. So nobody's gone anywhere yet. Heartwood is open 11 to 6 Tuesday through Sunday. If you've never been there, they've got like the works of 30 artists there,
from
and it's amazing.
And from here, I mean this region.
Yeah.
And it's amazing. So check that out. And then also on Saturday, it is, this is funny, it's Ram Saturday at the Fort Smith Regional Art Museum. Mm-hmm. From noon to four on Saturday, they have
Rams?
Arts and crafts.
Oh, okay.
Tomorrow, snowflakes.
Mm. Well, maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
All right.
Hands-on, all ages, free. The film noir series continues at the Fayetteville Public Library at 2 o'clock tomorrow. Tomorrow is The Woman in the Window.
I've never seen this.
I love the idea of a film noir series.
No, I do, too.
And then it is the...
Ever seen The Concrete Jungle?
No.
It's good. Go ahead.
It is the ubiquitous Eagle Watch Cruise.
Mm-hmm.
Goes on this time every year at 3 o'clock at the Rocky Branch Marina near Rogers. It's hosted by Hobbs State Park. It's $5 to $10. You must make reservations. 7-8-9-5000. And if you're a little round girl like I am and it's cold, by the time they get you bundled up for that cruise, you will look like the little boy in Christmas Story.
As soon as they do these in June and not on open water, I'm all about it.
You're not ever going on a Disney cruise, are you?
I'm not. Put it this way. Ask me, are you ever going on a blank cruise? No. Is that on open water? Yes, it is. No, I'm not. No. Nope.
You're so
healthy,
funny.
Respect of water.
There you go.
Becca Martin Brown, features editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette. The Ozarks will be on display on TV screens across the country this weekend as the third season of HBO's True Detective premieres Sunday night.
Well, Detective Hayes, could you tell us your timeline of events?
November 7th, 1980.
The show was shot across Northwest Arkansas and the River Valley over the course of most of 2018. The season will not only feature recognizable landmarks, it will also feature plenty of locals who had a chance to be extras. True Detective wasn't just shot in the Ozarks. The plot of season three is set here, and the murder story unfolds across three decades, 1980s, 1990, and 2015. The show stars Oscar and Golden Globe winner Mahershala Ali as State Police Detective Wayne Hayes from the fictional town of West Finger, Arkansas, as well as several other notable actors. There is at least one public watch party scheduled for the premiere. The Artist Laboratory Theater on South College Avenue is hosting. There will be snacks and drinks. Everyone welcome. Suggested donation of $5. Doors open at 7:30. The screening starts at 8. The first two of the season's 8 episodes will be released back-to-back. And contributors to this edition of Ozarks at Large included Antoinette Grajeda and Zuzana Sitek. Additional help from Timothy Dennis. Roby Brock is with Talk Business and Politics, and he joins us most Fridays, as he did this week. You can read about the items we talked about at talkbusiness.net. And thanks to Becca Martin Brown, features editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette, for stopping by for her first visit in 2019. A listener-supported service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Garfield. Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums. We will be back with you Sunday morning at 9 for the next edition of Weekend Ozarks at Large. And then beginning Monday at noon and 7, we'll be back for another brand new week of daily editions of Ozarks at Large. You can learn more about us and listen to past editions of our show at our website, ozarksatlarge.com. Stay dry. Thanks for spending part of your Friday with us.